Blog Talk Radio.
After the familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the Pugilist Corner. Got a great little lineup here tonight. We're going to be talking with Mr. John Scully. John just recently took a trip to Louisville, Kentucky, and visited some of the old haunts there, the old Muhammad Ali gym, Greg Page, and of course, the kind of long-forgotten Jimmy Ellis, but, you know, these were three of the heavyweight champions all coming out of Louisville, Kentucky, and it's kind of interesting to see how things have fared. Of course, most of the buildings are abandoned now or turned into other purposes. If you look on Mr. Scully's Facebook page, you'll see a lot of the pictures that he took. We're also going to be talking to Tony Harrison, Detroit-based Tony Harrison. Of course, we're going to talk a little Super Bowl. Remarkable family. His cousin, Mr. Devin Funches, will be playing in the Super Bowl his rookie year. So a lot to be congratulate Mr. Tony Harris about. We're going to talk about what he has upcoming, and we're going to get, he's a big sports fan, so we're going to talk a little bit about Calvin Johnson also, and find out what he has coming back up in the ring. And our third guest is going to be Mr. Luis Garcia. He's a Cuban fighter coming to the United States by way of Ireland. Just made his debut after being absent from the ring for 5 years. He had a 61-second knockout. We're going to talk to, I believe he's going to be campaigning at light heavyweight, but we will be sure and ask him whether he's going to be campaigning at cruiserweight or light heavy. That should be interesting. Hey, all of these Cuban-born fighters, they come ready to fight. They've been in a great system. He's had quite a few lapses, but I think now he's ready to get back on track. He's back here. His publicist is Mr. Bob Trieger. So, I'm sure that we'll be having a lot of press releases. Bob knows how to take care of his clients. He'll make sure that his name's out there. And I'm sure that we'll be having some great fights for Mr. Luis. Also, next week, just a heads up for those already listening, we will be having Mr. Virgil Hunter. He will be on the show next week. Already have confirmation. Trying to get the heavyweight champ himself, Mr. Deontay Wilder, see if we can get him in next week. And we've been trying very hard to get Ken Porter on. Ken, as you know, trained Sean. We had a great conversation with the Porter team at the Guerrero fight where they were there along with Keith Thurman. So we're going to talk, we're going to try to get Mr. Ken Porter on the show also next week. But right now, let's see if we can get Mr. Scully in here. Dice, man, is back up, is back east. He's back up north up there in Connecticut. So according to the weather report, he's definitely back up there in the ice weather. So let's see what's going on up in Connecticut. And here we have Mr. Ice.
Yes, sir.
John Scully. Ice, how are you doing tonight, my man?
Everything's good. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well, man. Have you have you got yourself out from underneath all that snow up there in Connecticut, my man?
Yeah. No, we're good. It actually melted pretty quick, and my wife had just bought a snowblower, so everything turned out good for the most part.
Yeah. Okay. I was just kind of catching the listeners up on what was going on, my man. I caught a lot of your pictures on Facebook and was noting a lot of the places that you visited during your travel. So why don't you kind of get the fans caught up on your eventual trip to Louisville and the surrounding boxing historics?
Right. Well, basically, since the first book I ever read about boxing was The Greatest, Muhammad Ali's autobiography, and in it, it obviously talks about Louisville quite a bit, and so I always had these images in my head of these certain spots that he mentioned in the movie, and in the book, and so I always wanted to fly out there and just I'm just that type of person. I would just fly out there. So I had a ticket. An open-ended ticket that someone had actually given me, so I've been waiting for a chance to use it. And so I went out. I just went out this weekend. I got myself a hotel room, and the funny thing is, I had actually put it up. I rented a car, but I had actually put it up on Facebook that I was going out. And one of the guys who lives in Louisville, who used to be a professional boxer, he said, "Oh man, let's meet up." Because he knew me through boxing. I never met him before, but we contacted each other through boxing. And so he came and picked me up, and he brought me all over. A guy by the name of Tim Ray. He fought Ike Iwabuchi and quite a few named heavyweights. And so he brought me around. He brought me to all the places I wanted to see, which probably the main thing was Ali's house, the house he lived in as a boy. And so I went there, and I went there actually twice. One time I just went, and I just checked it out from afar. But the second time I went, I actually, because the house is empty, nobody lives in it. So I went in the backyard, and, I guess I was trespassing. But I went in the backyard, and I videotaped it. And it's actually on YouTube. If anyone wants to check it out, it's on YouTube. I actually talked to the guy who lives a couple houses away, and that guy was about early 60s, and he said he's been living there all these years. Like he knew Ali when Ali was a kid, and he told me a few stories. And then I checked out the bridge, the Second Street Bridge, which if people are familiar with Ali, that's the bridge that he supposedly. Now it's not a bona fide 100% verified story, but the legend has it that he threw his gold medal off the bridge into the Ohio River from the Second Street Bridge. So I went to that bridge and actually videotaped my time there, and I checked out the Ali Museum, which is right in downtown Louisville, which has all kinds of all the Leroy Newman paintings that Leroy Newman did of him. They actually have one room just for those paintings, and has the actual notes that Leroy wrote from ringside that he wrote on the notes. On the paintings, and so that was it. I checked out a few gyms. Actually, there's an abandoned gym that Greg Page used to train in, and so he brought me there, and so I got to see all the pretty much everything I wanted to see.
Now, what building was it that had the mural on the back of it, John?
Oh, that was a gym in downtown Louis. It's actually in one of the poorer neighborhoods. I forget the exact name, but I know I was on the phone with a friend of mine, And I told him where I was, and he goes, "Oh, you're in the hood right now. You know, you're." So I forget the name of it, but it was a gym in the neighborhood there, and they had. I went on a Saturday, and there was a whole. But it was actually some really good sparring going on. Two amateur kids, 152 pounders, were working with each other, and out in the back, they have a huge mural that covers the whole back wall of the outside of the gym. Which honors the four heavyweight champions from Louisville, which is Marvin Hart, Jimmy Ellis, Greg Page, and Muhammad Ali. So I thought that was pretty spectacular. It's the whole wall, like the whole back of the building, is covered with their names and accomplishments.
Yeah, quite a tribute. You also spoke a little bit about Greg Page. I know there's tons of memorabilia as far as Ali and that, but John, is there still a lot of Greg Page memorabilia around? And do people still recall Greg Page within the same neighborhood?
People were talking. Yeah, his name is always going to come up in the conversations. But his gym that he trained at, that particular gym is actually abandoned. I had put that picture up. So I wasn't able to actually speak to anyone other than the guy who was bringing me around, Tim. He knew Greg actually pretty well. So we discussed him. I did personally, because actually in the 80s, Greg was my favorite heavyweight. He was the guy I really enjoyed watching. So I had my own personal questions that I asked Tim. Like I say, it was just surreal. We went to Louisville Gardens, which is like a civic center type of place downtown, where actually Greg Page and Muhammad Ali actually boxed an exhibition there when Greg was still an amateur. And so that was a place that I'd wanted to go see. And so it was just kind of surreal, being in his neighborhood and realizing that when he was Cassius Clay, these were the streets that he jogged on, and he walked to school, and he rode his bike, and whatever he did. So I really enjoyed the trip tremendously.
John, you spoke of watching a couple of fighters while you were at the gym. I know you didn't spend a lot of time there, John, but is boxing still alive and well in Louisville on the amateur status?
Oh yeah, there's several gyms out there, and like I say, the gym I was at on that Saturday, there was another gym had come in for the sparring, so there was two gyms going against each other, and both kids that I saw spar, they looked very, very good, like definitely national caliber amateurs. So yeah, there's definitely some lively boxing going on in Louisville, that's for sure.
You spoke with some of the gentleman that you were with. You said you were speaking of his background and how you guys met up. John, I know two old boxing guys get together, I know there's a lot of conversations and stories that go around. And I mean, you had John, just talking to you, dude, I'm sure there's thousands and thousands of stories that he never even heard or imagined. But John, tell us a little bit about your experience, just going there, meeting just another boxing fan and being able to interact and just be two guys talking boxing, man.
Oh, yeah, it was, we were both. It seemed like we were both in our element because Tim is a guy who he's still there. He reminds me of me in that he really knows boxing and he knows some of the obscure names, not just the big stars. And he was very aware, he had a lot of stories about Greg and sparring with Greg back in the 80s and the 90s and times that he had actually met Ali and times that he had seen Ali. And actually I was supposed to meet with Ali's brother, Rudy Rockman, and it was all set. We were going to hang out. I was going to take him to lunch. But on the last day, his wife got I think she had a toothache problem, and he had to take her. And so we just weren't able to meet. But he knows Ollie's brother, and so he told me stories about him, and he still lives there. Ollie's brother still lives right in Louisville, so he's never left. He's been there his whole life, and so he said, you know, it's kind of cool. He's like royalty. Everybody knows him. Like, no one would bother him, you know, because he's older now, but he walks down the street, and everybody knows him. Nobody bothers him, and so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know, it is. I remember, as I think I told you once before, we had a young man from Youngstown, Ohio, go down and fight Muhammad Ali. I believe it was an AAU, or it might have been a Louisville Golden Gloves. I'm not exactly sure what the event was. After fighting Muhammad Ali, he came back to Youngstown and told us, you know, this young man is going to be heavyweight champion of the world someday. And as far as I know, Joe never put on the gloves, amateur or professionally, after that whooping. So,
wow.
You know, for some it only takes one whooping, but, you know, for Muhammad Ali, I mean, you know, everybody's not going to be a Floyd Patterson, you know. But John, you know, hey, you know, there's a couple things that happened while you were gone that we haven't had a real chance to talk to you about over the week. While you were gone, while you were in Louisville, there's been some. Actually, there's a real surprise announcement today about who Canelo Alvarez is going to fight on May 7th. I don't think anyone saw that coming, but. John, let's start off with the Garcia and Guerrero fight. John, was there any big surprises in that fight to you? And do you think
I mean, you know, I think it pretty much went according to the way I kind of thought it was going to go. You know, Guerrero made a run for it. You know, he's no punk whatsoever. But, you know, just the timing of it all, you know, it was in Garcia's favor, and that's the way it worked out. I think it was a good fight, a good test for him, but I think it went the way most people thought it would go.
Yeah, that fight was kind of interesting, John, because I was in the audience there, and you know, I mean, we all knew that Danny Garcia had won the fight. There might have been, you know, different people might have had some objections to the actual final score. But I don't think we really saw, you know, how resoundingly he won the fight and was actually getting to Guerrero until we saw him in the press conference. And that's when you realized that, you know, maybe there was a lot of punches that we weren't seeing at ringside, but Guerrero definitely couldn't get out of the way. Now, a fight to me that, you know, I thought, I didn't see anything different about the fight. It didn't matter to me whether he had Freddie Roach in his corner or not. And I'm talking about John Pascal and Kovalov. John, anything you take from that fight? And what do you think about, you know, there's the possibility now, Andre Ward coming back out at light heavy, supposedly two fights before he meets Kovalev. What do you think?
I think they're, you know, if they do it right, I think they're gonna build it up, and it's gonna be really, really. By the time they get done building it up, I think it's gonna be a big, big, big fight. And I'll tell you, I mean, I don't pick against Andre Ward, but I don't know. that guy is serious, and you know, and that just, I'll tell you one thing. People are turned off a little bit, which I'm surprised, but. I'll tell you, the way he was in the post-fight interview, you can clearly see that Kovalev is a different cut from a different cloth. Like, he doesn't let it go. He's what, you know, he's actually what I thought pro fighters all were. When I was a kid, I thought all pro fighters were like that. And when I first was, like, seeing pro fights, and when the guys would hug after, and it always kind of struck me as kind of odd, especially when guys like Tyson and maybe Hagler, you know, when the meaner type of guys would do it, they get, you know, it almost like threw me, because I said, man, you know, these guys just got them trying to kill each other, and now they're hugging. But this guy, he takes it to a different level. Like, you can see clearly that he doesn't let it go. Like he was angry and he prolonged it and he said it. He said, "I prolonged it. I was trying to torture him." And then when Adonis came in the ring, clearly to me it was no act. It looked to me like Kovalev was ready to fight right there. Like it wouldn't have taken much for it to turn into a fist fight. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority, but I like it. I like that a lot. I like his demeanor. I like his attitude. You know, he's a hardcore. You know, a lot of those guys. I mean, maybe it's a cultural thing, but you know, the Eastern European, the Eastern Bloc. I mean, those guys are different. They're cut from a different cloth as humans, not just as boxers, but I mean, just as people. It's just a different mentality, and you're seeing it in the way he's talking after the fight. I like it. I think he's very intriguing. And I think him and Andre Ward, by the time the promotion gets done and everybody sees what Andre is really in with, you know, if Andre beats him, there's no question that he's – there may be no question now, but if he beats Kovalev moving up in weight, then there'll be no question that he's pound for pound the elite.
You know, now, I have a little apprehension there, John, just like you do. I mean, you know, because the inactivity, the injuries, and then moving up in weight, and only two fights before he fights a beast like Kovalev. Now, you know, I have no qualms about how skilled the fighter Andre Ward is. I'm kind of siding with you here, though, John. You know, when you talk to this man and you look at how he carries himself in the ring, once that bell rings, this is certainly taking it to another level. And I think it's going to be a good fight and a very interesting fight. And we'll really find out exactly where these two stand. But I think, John, it's going to take a lot of publicity for them to pull off the type of crowd that they want for this fight. Considering that, although we all know his abilities, Andre is just not one to put a lot of butts in seats. But John, speaking of that same mentality, there's been a lot of things. We've seen a lot of shows now, including, Tyson Fury has been on HBO. He's been on Showtime. We've seen a lot of interviews. John, do you think that Tyson is the real deal, or do you think this is the bravado of winning the fight kind of taking over?
No, I think he's legit. I think he's the real deal. He's also, I believe. He's not a mean-spirited guy necessarily outwardly, but I think he's cut from a similar cloth as Kovalev. I think that he's fearless. You know, he doesn't fight in the same manner, but he's fearless. I think he'd fight anybody. He knows what it takes to win. I think he's exciting in it with his talking and you know, he's almost like the white Muhammad Ali. And I said that a couple years ago when he fought Steve Cunningham. You know, I said, wow, you know, this guy's got the gift. He's got that talking, and he gets it. He gets how to talk, and, you know, he mixes humor with it, and he knows how to get under your skin, and he's got people talking. I mean, you know, since he beat Klitschko, and he was singing in the ring, and he was doing all this stuff, and now you're hearing about his background as a gypsy, which I didn't even know until like a week ago. I didn't really know the extent of his background like that. And I think he's a great story, and I think he's, him and Wilder down the road, I think it's going to be the big heavyweight fight. And I think a lot of people, by the time they get done promoting it, I think it's going to be very interesting.
I'm with you on that, John. You know, since you and Ronnie are kind of around the same era of boxing there, there was a fight that took place about 22 years ago. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., he lost for the first time to Frankie Randle. John, what are your thoughts of Frankie Randle?
I think Frankie was very good technician, you know, very good fighter. And he just, you know, he probably isn't remembered as well as he should. And he, you know, toward the end of his career, he, you know, he really hit a slide there. And I think, you know, for lack of a better term, I mean, he was just taking fights for money. And he actually got stopped several times by guys that he probably wouldn't have lost to several years earlier. But I think, you know, at his best, like when he fought Chavez, I think he, you know, he showed he had world-class skills. And, you know, he really, really did a job with Chavez in that first fight. So probably he probably won't be remembered maybe as well as his talent should have had him remembered. But I think people that know that Frankie Randall was the real deal.
Yeah, you and Ronnie, you know, I know the two of you would have fond memories of him, and would also know a lot about the career that a lot of people have either forgotten or don't really know about. John, Danny Jacobs, Peter Cullen says he wants a rematch. Sergio Moore says he wants a rematch. Do you think either one of these two will meet Danny Jacobs next, or do you see Danny Jacobs moving on?
I would assume he would move on. Just from a business standpoint, he wouldn't need those guys. You know, now he's in line, and he's being talked about for fighting Triple G. And I'm the type, I've never been a businessman. I don't like that. But it is what it is. If it's me, I say, hey, fight whoever, you know, fight Peter again, because not that it was a fluke, but, you know, anytime there's a first-round knockout, it's highly unlikely that would ever happen again. So we'd like to see him fight again just to see what would really happen over the distance, over a longer distance. But the fact is, he's in a great position now, and he's more than likely going to wade and maneuver himself into a fight with Triple G and or Canelo, and that's what he should do in terms of maximizing his earning potential. You know, I think guys like him should get the money that they could get, and then after they're somewhat secure, then they can go after the riskier fights. Because Quillen was a fight for him to fight him one time. He needed it. He needed to elevate himself. But after he won, to fight him again and give him another chance would not be really a wise business decision, I don't think.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree with you there. I don't see him going back to fight either one of those two, nor do I think either one of them would give him the payday that, you know, like you said, that's going to offer him financial stability. Maybe after a fight with Triple G or somewhere down the line, maybe, but no, not right now. John, Floyd Mayweather says he's been offered 9 figures to come back. Knowing how Floyd feels about money, there's a possibility that we're going to see Floyd back in the ring. And do you think that we'll see another Floyd? Do you think that the public will pay for a Floyd Manny too?
I honestly hope not. You know, I've always thought that he'll come back. I've always thought that. I never thought that the retirement was legit. I think maybe in his mind he needed a rest, but also, if you remember, I think we talked about it before one time, but when Sugar Ray Leonard retired and then he was going to come back, and when he came back to fight, and it was just, you know, when he fought Kevin Howard, and it was just such a big event in the sports world that Sugar Ray was returning. And I think Floyd envisioned that for himself. Now, I don't necessarily agree that it would be that big of a deal. I just feel like, I'm on the fence about it, because I certainly wouldn't want to see Pacquiao and him again. I didn't want to see it the first time, to be honest. And I knew that he was going to beat Pacquiao, and I knew it wasn't going to be overly competitive. And I thought that everybody that knows boxing knew that. Pay again fight to see them fight again. I think it would show the level of lack of knowledge of real boxing. You know, I think people that don't know boxing could be fooled into thinking that something would be different this time, but I just can't see it. And I'm sure, I'll say this much, I'm sure Floyd is not getting out of shape. Most fighters by now, they probably would have gained 20 or 25 pounds. But I'll be willing to bet that Floyd is probably still in good shape right now, and he'll remain that way until he comes back.
Well, I tell you what, he didn't look 25, he didn't look 10, even 10 pounds overweight when he was at the Guerrero fight. And most of the pictures I've seen, John, I have to agree with you. I don't think he's, you know, five pounds maybe, you know, but I can't see him being out of shape either. John, before we let you go, man, I got to ask you, how surprised were you at the announcement today, May 7th, Amir Khan and Canelo Alvarez?
I can't believe it. I don't know. I don't know. You know, like I don't know how a guy who's not a even a junior middleweight gets to just jump up and fight for the middleweight title. You know, it just shows you how our boxing game is being run and what dictates it. And you know, I don't think it's a good thing. I don't think it's even really a good fight. I just think Canelo's too strong and what have you. But I mean, I guess that's the game we're in today. You know, the names and the way they can spin it, and they can get certain people, factions of the society, to buy it, and it will be a big fight. And I think people will be very curious about it. But you know, it's not right that. You know, top middleweights are getting bypassed so that a welterweight can move up and take their spot in this succession of, you know, in the line.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, once again, scratch your head, you know, what are sanctioning bodies for?
Right. It's got to be like a, you know, it's amusing. Like, we can actually sit here and joke about it because it's that kind of amusement. You know, the belt.
Well, we can joke about it because we're not the ones that have to get in the ring.
Right. But you look at the belt. You know, it used to be the belt was such a coveted thing, and you know, that green belt. You know, and now it's just like, man, these guys, they're ruining it. You know, they're ruining it for me because they're diluting the mess out of it, and I just hate it, you know.
I totally hear you, John, and you know, as much as I sympathize, you know, with the boxing public, I mean, you know, I just don't understand. I don't know what we can do as boxing fans, as the public, other than you know, not buy the fights, boxing fans aren't going to do that. So that's something that, you know, we just have to live with. But John, I think it's once again, it's you know, people talk about, you know, the state of boxing these days, but in a lot of ways, I don't think we're much removed from the old Bob Arum and Don King days. Maybe it's just
right.
I don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, John, thank you so much for coming on tonight, my man. We always appreciate your time. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, a lot of our listeners, I saw you got a lot of hits on that Facebook story and the different things that you were showing. So I wanted to make sure that our fans were aware of it. And if they go through those pictures, picture by picture, it's somewhat of a history lesson. So, John, we appreciate your time, man. Why don't you tell us what we have going? You got any fighters that are going to be in the ring soon? Anything on the amateur front? What's going on up there in Connecticut?
Well, I actually have my amateur middleweight who's fighting this Saturday for the Golden Gloves Championship here in our region. Actually, the same Golden Gloves tournament that I fought in when I was an amateur. So it's funny because 30 years ago, 1986, I won the Golden Gloves at 165 pounds, and here it is 30 years later exactly, and the boxer I'm training, he's going for the 165-pound championship this Saturday. So
So I'm busy with him, and you know, that's my main focus right at the moment is getting him ready for Saturday.
Oh, well, hey, we wish you luck, my man. And as always, like I said, you know, we hope to have you back soon. And, hey, we wish you all the luck in the world this weekend. And, hey, we'll get you back on, get your fighter back on, and talk about the experience, my man.
All right. I really appreciate you having me. Thank you.
No problem, John. You have a great night, my man. Talk to you next
too.
Week.
Good night.
That was Iceman John Scully sharing some of his vacation with us, what was going on while he was down there in Louisville. I thought it would be good just for some of us to hear what was going on. And check out John's Facebook page if you get a chance, John Iceman Scully, and you can see all the pictures that he left up from Louisville. Right now we're going to get our next guest on the line. Mr. Tony Harrison, of course, out of the Detroit city. And we're going to talk to Tony here right quick, as soon as I can get him on the line. Hello, Mr.
Who?
Harrison. Hello, Tony.
Yeah, who is this?
This is James from the Pugilist Corner, man. What's going on? It's Tuesday night.
From where?
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear
me? You're on the air, my man.
What's going on, Jack?
Hey. No, what's going on, Mr. I Am Boxing? How is everything going up there in Detroit City?
Everything good, man. Everything good, man. I'm just, you know, maxing and relaxing, man.
Well, we're going to talk some sports. We're going to talk some boxing, my man. We're going to talk Detroit. You know, every time I talk to you, you know, we have great conversations because you love sports just like I do. So, first, let's get this party started. Let's talk about your Detroit Lions, man. Did you expect Calvin Johnson to retire, or was this already a known fact among Lions fans?
No, man, nobody expected Calvin to be gone. You know, that's gone, you know what I mean? But you know what I mean? Like, these you got to understand it, because these players are taking true punishment from – you know, they putting their bodies through hell, man. You know what I mean? So him retiring with all that money, man, and his sanity, man, you know, is worth more than a couple more dollars or a championship.
Now, Tony, I'm going to ask you because, I mean, you know, you're in a hurt business yourself. So you, I mean, in a lot of ways, I mean, you can kind of parallel – okay. Calvin, with the Detroit Lions, I believe the record that he has for his seasons is 54-90. Do you think if it was the other way around, do you think that if Detroit had been 90-54, do you think that Calvin would still be around? Do you think that
he
had
more...
You
know what I mean, man? The Kool-Aid is always sweeter when you add sugar to it, man. So, you know, if you win it, you know, I believe he would stick around.
Now that you've lost one of the greatest wide receivers, do you still have confidence in your quarterback, or do you think maybe it's time for you guys to start looking for another QB?
You know what, man? To be honest, I honestly think it helps us out. You know what I mean? Because he's not just looking for that one star player. You know what I mean? I watched, you know, the games when Calvin Johnson got injured, you know, a minute ago. and he had to play with like Golden Tate and them as his receivers. And, you know, he did tremendously well because he just wasn't looking for Calvin Johnson. And, you know, we won games. So, you know, and in the same token, you can kind of look at the Carolina Panthers like that because, you know, they lost their star receiver in.
Kevin Benjamin. I think we just lost Tony. Let me see if I can get him back on the line here.
One, three, two, four, four, one, one, two is not available. At the tone.
What's going on? What's going on? Tony must have forgot to charge his phone.
One, three, two, four.
I don't know if I can blame this one on Blog Talk Radio. Let's see. I'm not sure what happened here. I'm trying to get Tony back, and we can't. Either his phone has went out. Well, it looks like we have no technical difficulties here. I don't exactly know what happened or what is going on. But I have a caller here from the 917. Caller from the 917, how can we help you this evening, my man?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, how you
Hello,
doing?
Who's this?
It's Jabron from New York.
Oh, what's going on, my man?
Nothing much. I haven't called in a while because my work schedule changed, but now it's changed again, so now I can get in on the calls more often.
Oh, man, I'm glad, very, very glad to have you on. And, I don't know exactly what happened with Mr. Harrison there, but, tell me... Exactly. What did you think about the big announcement today? Amir Khan and Canelo Alvarez. Did you see that coming? Another welterweight being pushed ahead of all of this young talent that we have. What did you think about this matchup, my man?
Far as business wise, I mean, I think it was a smart decision on Canelo and them team part far as business-wise. I mean, to have a live body in there and a winnable fight, that's their thing. They're trying to protect their investment. So a winnable fight that will be action and make Canelo look very explosive. But depending on how Amir Khan's deal with the weight, moving up with the weight, because he does have a long wingspan and he has fast hands. And as we know, when Canelo gets in the ring with people that's mobile, that throws more than one punch at a time, they can give him problems. If we revert back to the Laura fight and when he fought having a brain fart. Oh, Austin Trout.
Well, now, I understand what you're saying from a financial point of view, but I've always said that I thought that the best fight financially, when you're talking about dollars, and well, not dollars, but talking about euros, I always thought to kill Brooke Amir Khan in Manchester would make much more money than anybody fight here in the United States.
Oh, yes, I agree with you with that. I felt like Amir Khan has been ducking that fight for quite some time, and they could really sell it out good at, like, a stadium of sort. And I think the U.S. will actually grasp to it, especially if they put it on prime time for the U.S. fans to be able to take advantage of that fight. That would definitely be a great fight. But as far as Canelo, I mean, he saved his mouth that he's willing to fight anybody, and I believe deep down inside he's willing to fight anybody. But far as his advisors and Golden Boy Promotions, if you look at his career, they pretty much, besides Laura and Trout, those are only two people that he's been in the ring, and Angulo, that's actually been in his weight class. If you go all the way back, he fought a blown up Jacinto Lopez. He fought what Matthew Hatton, all these blown up welterweight and lightweight guys. So I mean, we really haven't seen him fight a true either 154 or a 160 pounder consistently.
Well, you know, that was my point again. You know, once again, we see another welterweight, you know, being pushed up to fight Canelo, you know, when we have some very good guys out there. So, you know, I mean, to me, this was, I don't want to say garbage, but I just think that, you know, hey, you know, if you're going to say that you're going to fight the best, you know, and then, you know, let's talk about it like it is. You know, like Golden Boy Al Haymon. You know, now how in the world are you going to be suing Al Haymon? But then you want to get in the ring with one of his fighters. This doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I've reading different stories, and a whole bunch of De La Hoya only spoke to Amir Khan's father, and they didn't speak to Al Haymon, but somebody had to speak to Al Haymon.
Yeah, so you're right. Somebody had to say something. And you know, we all know that, you know, hey, Al Haymon is a businessman. He's not going to let, you know, unlike a lot of these, you know, other promoters or you know, whatever you, however label or tag you want to put on them, you know, Al is not going to let personal feelings interfere with business. So, you know, I can understand from Al's point of view. You know, I don't understand, you know, Golden Boy, if you're saying that this man has a monopoly and you don't want to, you know, have anything to do with him, but you're still inviting his fighters. So, you know.
Yeah. Can I just ask one quick question? Because it seems like nobody gave a definite answer within the last week. Is the Andre Ward warm-up fight signed? Did he sign on the dotted line, or it's still up in the air?
Well, you know, once again, it depends on whose camp you want to talk to. Now, when we had Abel Sanchez on the show, Abel says that nothing's been signed. You know, and that's who his Ward's fight is supposed to be. Now, according to Ward, on the last telecast, you know, the two fights are signed, and all he has to do is complete the two fights, and his third fight is with Kovalev. So, you know, I mean, but this is nothing new with Andre. I mean, you know. How many fights have we seen Ward sign for compared to how many he's actually had?
Well, that's true. And there's some more speculation going around with so-called Mr. Bernard Hopkins' mystery opponent supposed to be announced real soon.
Nah, see, I mean, look, there are certain things that I'm not really sure I want to see. And, you know, Bernard Hopkins is one of them. Roy Jones Jr. is another. Antonio Tarver is another. And Zab Judah is another. Now, all of these guys have had great careers, but why the hell are they still fighting to take our money, or why are we still giving them our money?
I 100% agree with you. I'm just praying and hoping. And he said he would never fight them, but since we haven't got confirmation on Andre signing on the dotted line, and Bernard said his opponent that he would be the underdog, so I'm hoping he does not get in the ring with Andre Ward. I'm praying and hoping.
Yeah, you know, we'll definitely have to see about that. What did you think about the Kovalov Pascal fight? What did you think about the aftermath when Adonis jumped in the ring? Did you think that there were going to be fireworks right on the spot?
No, I didn't think so. I mean, Adonis Stevenson, I think that was kind of premeditated. I just don't think he was expecting to Kovalev to, like, diss him like that and call him a chicken, but I thought he was going to get in the ring to say something. And if you pay attention closely, all he said is, I'm the real champ. He never said, we can fight anywhere, any place, anytime. He just said, I'm the real champion. So that showed me right there, that was just a publicity stunt to get things stirred up, to make it seem like, oh, he really want to fight. But if that's the case, they will get the fight done. Because right now, to my understanding, he's basically like a free agent.
Yeah, basically he is. You know, once again, man, you know, my concern is I'm not really concerned about the matchups themselves as I am so much about, I mean, do you really think that either one of these gentlemen on their own could put enough butts in seats to make this, you know, to make any other fight other than the two of them? I mean, I don't really see anyone else that's going to provide the type of firepower and the type of fan-friendly atmosphere that's going to make the fight viable unless they fight each other, because neither one of them on their own is a headline. I mean, Kovalev may be, but not at this particular point, and not even in Canada. Do you think it would be viable, but even the Lemieux fight didn't sell out, did it?
No, it didn't. And you made a good point there. I never looked at it at that way, because I'm such a diehard fan that I look at the skills, and I think Kovalev is a very skilled fighter, but that's an interesting thing. And because Andre Ward is not helping by not being active, and, you know, it seems like, no disrespect to him, but it seems like he's trying to have Oakland babysit him. He got to come to the East Coast or move around, even with the tournament at 168. He still fought. That was Carl Froch complaining, like, get this guy to Oakland. Maybe he would have more fans if he fought maybe in Madison Square Garden or Atlantic City or Florida or Vegas.
What about just fighting, period?
You know, that would be a starter. That would definitely be a starter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he could fight in Tupelo, Mississippi. People are going to come. You know, let's fight somewhere. You know, I mean, hey, Deontay Wilder took the heavyweight champion to Birmingham, Alabama. I'm sure Andre Ward could take a fight, like you say, Washington, D.C., Chicago, you know, hey, Terrence Crawford went to Omaha, Nebraska. You're going to tell me Andre can't be? Can't, I mean, you know, come on. there's a lot to be said. There's a lot to be said for Andre's skills, but, you know, as far as, like I said, markability, that's another thing. I really got into this with another fan earlier today. When you're talking about it as a boxing fan, you know, how we watch skills. But do you think that today's fighters, and I'm not talking about all of them, but I'm talking about a few. And I'll just throw one name out there, Adrian Broner. Do you think that sometimes the skills that we attribute to these fighters is maybe a little bit overrated just because we want to see them or they're fan-friendly, but their skills really aren't? I mean, you know, back in the day when you could watch almost any fight, all fighters knew how to move, all fighters knew how to throw a jab, and you had action from beginning to end. Nowadays, do you think that the skills have eroded and it's more about showmanship?
Yes, I definitely 100% believe that it's about showmanship. And one fighter I would like to talk about when it comes to that I'm seeing, instead of progression, I'm seeing him go backwards, is Deontay Wilder. It was like when he went to the Stiverne fight, it was like I watched him up to that point, and it was like he was starting to sit down more on his jab, be more patient. But ever since he won the belt, it's like he's fighting with his hands down, he has his chin open, he's not disciplined, and it's like, wait a minute, you haven't accomplished nothing yet. You just got the belt, and now it's time to fine-tune. And I feel like we don't have enough of the Ronnie Shields and Emmanuel Stewart's in the sport anymore, because everybody's trying to build a brand instead of just going and working on fundamentals.
Precisely. You hit the word, you hit it right on the head when you said fundamentals. I think we're seeing less and less fundamentals, and I think we're seeing, I mean, back in the day, I mean, even Tommy Hearns, Sugar Ray Leonard, these guys had hundreds of amateur fights. Now you see guys turning pro after 25, after 40. You know, I mean, I'm sure listening to the program, you've heard me talk to Gary Russell Sr., Jake Smith, a lot of the guys that Barry Hunter, guys that are really connected with our amateurs. And I can't even get my head around the new rules where we don't, you know, I mean, we don't even have American coaches coaching our Olympic team. I mean, how did we get to this point?
I feel like more back in the days, it was more of survival. Whereas a lot of times these boxers wasn't fighting to, hey, I want to be the champion of the world. It was, hey, I got to put food on my table. I have to provide for my family, you know. So it was more dedication. It wasn't like, well, hey, if I don't fight or if I win a couple of dollars, I can take this money and invest it. You know, technology has changed so much now where, you know, everybody has a get-rich scheme. So it's no more just coming from the gut anymore.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with you. We have one more guest, a young man from Cuba. He's been fighting in Ireland, Louis Garcia. And then I'm going to get right back to you, man, because we're only going to have him off about 15 or 20 minutes. And I'm going to get right back to you, but enjoyed the exchanges here, and I look forward to talking to you right after our next guest. Let's get him on.
Okay.
Quick.
All right.
Hello, Mr. Garcia.
Hi.
Hello, how are you doing tonight?
Good, good, good. You?
I'm doing fine. First of all, let's get a proper introduction. This is Mr. Luis Garcia. Are you fighting cruiserweight or light heavy?
Oh, I'm fighting light heavy.
Light heavy? Okay. Okay. Let's get that started now. Luis, you have a very, very interesting career. You're a Cuban-born fighter, but your first trip out of Cuba was to Ireland. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Oh, yeah. I was contacted by Gary Haidt, Rigondeau previous manager, when I was living in Cuba. So talked to me, and she offered me if I wanted to move to Ireland to start fighting pro. So I decided to move there. So I started my career as a pro over there in 2008. So since then, everything has been going well.
Now, I believe when I was talking to Mr. Trigger, he said your family is still in Ireland?
Yeah, my girlfriend and our two kids, they live in Ireland. They're still there. Yeah.
Now, what was a bigger transition for you, from Cuba to Ireland or from Ireland to the United States?
I'm sorry?
What was a bigger transition for you going from Cuba to Ireland? With the different managers, different training and whatnot, or deciding to make the move from Ireland over here to the United States.
Well, what difficult for me to move to Cuba to Ireland? Because I was 20 years old, so I didn't have any family in Ireland or anything like that. So. And actually, I didn't speak English at all. So for me, it was hard at the beginning, you know, because what was most bothering me was the language. Because in Cuba, we speak Spanish, and in Ireland, they speak English. So, but after a year, I was living in Ireland, so I learned English. So the Irish people, they were very kind to me, so... What's getting issue after the first year living there, you know?
So, your last two fights, 2011, you fought Alexander Johnson out here in California. Then you had almost 4 years in between fights. Am I correct?
Yeah. After 2011, yeah, like you said, I fought in California, and then I signed with Luis Bella. So I don't know what happened between those 4 years that my manager stopped me fighting. So, but you know, that was passed. So now I signed a new contract with Kevin Dever from New York, my new manager, and a co-manager, Pat Brown. So everything goes well. I renewed my contract with Luis Bella. So everything goes well now.
Now, I think, you know, what was most amazing is that even after 4 years off, you took out your opponent in, what, 61 seconds?
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, in those 4 years, I was doing sparring. I was training every single day, like Monday to Friday. So I didn't stop training, you know. So I was doing sparring back in Ireland all the time. So I never stopped training, you know. So that's why when I came to here to New York, so I got like fighting like about 15 days notice. So I say, okay, I'm ready, you know. So didn't bother me at all.
Now, the last time you fought at 180 pounds, was 2009. The transition now to 184 as a regular weight is that mostly because of your size and the fact that you're getting older, or is this the fact, or is this just the weight that you feel most comfortable at?
No, I just thought the 187 pounds, you know, because like I said before, I took the fight like a 15 days notice, so I didn't want to kill myself losing weight, that kind of stuff, you know. So I said, okay, I'm gonna fight in 187 now, and then for the next fight, so I'm gonna come down like a 177, 178, so it doesn't matter, you know. So I didn't want to kill myself in the first fight, you know, because it was 4 years, so. And I was thinking to go strong, you know.
Now, tell me, what was it like fighting in New York at the Barclays Center? That has to be one of the highlights of your career so far, anyway.
Yeah, well, was amazing when Kevin Dever told me that I was going to fight over there. Was amazing, so I couldn't say no to the fight, even if 15 days notice, you know. So I couldn't say no. Was a mixed experience, so I couldn't ask for more after 4 years, you know. So I'm looking forward to the next one. We see.
Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but right now you're 13-0 with 10 knockouts?
Yeah.
When are you expecting, or when would you like to be back in the ring, and how many times would you like to fight in 2016 if you had your way?
Well, we have a plan for me to fight March 12th, March 16th. I think I'll be fighting this year 4 times. Or 5 times minimum. So at the end of 2016, I will come out like say 17-0, 18-0, 19-0 maybe, you know, because I want to recover those 4 years that I didn't fight. So actually I'm 28 years old, so time doesn't stop, you know.
Now, tell us a little bit about Mr. Patrick Thomas. We know the reputation that he has over there across the sea in Ireland. Can you tell us what it was like being trained by such a well-known Irishman? And who were some of the people that you were able to get in some work with?
Well, you know, like I said, when I came to Ireland in 2008, so I signed with Gary Harid, so things didn't go well with him, so he made a deal with Derek Harid that he would manage me, but he doesn't know much about boxing, so it was kind of difficult, and you know, so I signed a contract with him for 5 years, and it really was like a kind of nightmare, you know, because he didn't know anything about boxing, so he didn't take advice, he didn't take anything, so was crazy. But that's why my contract expired, so I contacted Kevin Dever, so he know about this business, so, and I signed a contract with him, and so far everything goes well, you know.
Now, tell me, how is it being over here? And seeing some of your countrymen like Mr. Rigondeaux and there's Landy Law, and you see the success that they have over here, even though people, you know, talk about, you know, the skills of the Cuban fighters, how much of an incentive was that to you to bring your career over here when you watched your fellow countrymen have the success that they're having?
Well, you know, for me, I'm very happy for them. They are world champion. Their career has been very well so far, and for me, it's kind of like you know, I want to be like them, how to be successful here in New York. And, you know, America is one of the biggest content in boxing. So there's all kind of, you know, there's all kind of fights you can have here. So, you know, I'm looking forward, really, really, really forward to fight the top heavyweight. I know I can be a world champion like them. So they'll call me sometimes because we know each other from Cuba, you know. So they'll call me sometimes all the way to me, you can do it, you can do it. So, and I know I can do it.
Yes, and I know, you know, having such a support system has to mean a lot to you. So tell us a little bit about your new organization, your new manager, and do you say you signed with Lou?
Well, yeah, I signed with my manager, Kevin Dewar, for 5 years, contract 5 years, and my co-manager, Pat Brown, as well. I signed with Louis de Bella, 3 year contract. So he has a really good plan for me. I'm really happy that I resigned with him again. He's a nice guy, nice promoter. He has a lot of shows, he has a lot of good fighters. He has a good reputation, so I can ask for more. And he told me in 2017, I'll be fighting for a world championship, you know. So I trust the guy, I trust my manager, my co-manager. So just waiting and see and do what I do best.
And how far, how soon do you expect to have your wife and the rest of your family over?
well, you know, I think by summer, I think they will come over and live with me. So I don't have to travel to Ireland and that kind of stuff, you know. So I think by summer they'll come to live with me. Everything's gonna be happy. So we'll see. They're excited to come over.
So is New York? Are you gonna be living and training in New York?
Well, right now I'm living in Peekskill. It's by Westchester County, something like that. It's after White Plains. It's a small town after White Plains. It's a nice town, quiet town, nice people around, you know, good energy. It's really nice down here. Yeah, I can ask for more, buddy.
Hey.
Yeah.
Great. Well, you know, great atmosphere to train in. You know, that is a boxing hotbed. We're looking forward to having you. You said you're going to be back in the ring in March?
Yeah, March 12th or March 15th, those weeks. Huh?
Oh, well, very good. Hopefully you'll be maybe a TV swing bout, or we'll be able to see some of your work on the big screen. Louis, hey, we thank you for taking time out for your training and being with us for these few minutes, my man. We look forward to having you back on as when the next fight is announced. Are you on any type of social media, Facebook, Twitter, anything?
I only have Facebook. My Facebook name is Luis Garcia Campolegre, so you can find me on Facebook. Also, I have a page, Luis Garcia, I say, boxing page. And, you know, I'm sorry about my English. I know my English is not that good, but, you know, I'm doing my best here, guys.
Oh, hey, we appreciate, you know, your time. We appreciate your effort. Believe me, we understand, you know, a lot of our boxing, you know, we have a lot of different groups, Mexicans, Spanish. I mean, you know, there's all types. We appreciate your effort, and we know that, you know, as your career goes on, as world champion, I'm sure you'll be speaking English probably better than I do by the time you get to be a world champ. So
I wish.
So, hey, all you need is the exposure and the American public to get to know you. And with every interview, you'll get better, just as every time you go in the ring, you get better. So, hey, We look to grow with you, and every time you win, we'll talk, my man. So, hey, you know, if nothing else, you want to improve your English, all you have to do is win, and, hey, we'll talk with you every week.
Oh, cool, man. I appreciate that. We love to do that.
Well, hey, and not only that, but, a lot, hey, you know, we like I said, we have a lot of, Cuban fans. We have some Cuban fighters, you know, and maybe there'll be a time when you can come on and even translate for some of your fellow brothers. So we're looking forward to you having a very long career. You're a very young man. You've only had about 40 or 50 rounds of professional fights. So, we look forward to being with you for a long time and growing with you and your career. So thank you very much, sir. And I will be looking forward to having you on. You say you're about as what, March 19th?
March 12th, March Master March 16th, I think they're going to fight.
All right, well, hey, you fight and we'll book it. So you have a great night, my man, and thank you so much.
Oh, thank you to you guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. That was light heavyweight prospect, Mr. Luis Garcia. Always glad to have the young prospects on the show, courtesy of Mr. Bob Trieger. And we look forward to having this young man back as his career progresses. But right now, let's get back to our former conversation. My man, did you have some things that you wanted to add these last 10 minutes? We can kind of kick it around a little bit.
Yeah, before I get into that, I wanted to thank you verbally, because I thank you through a text message before for sending me out a shirt when I first started calling in. I just wanted to give you a thank you on that one.
No problem, man. We, we always try to, when we have little things, we try to reward our listeners and the people that have been with us. And if I'm correct, you've been with us almost since day one, my man. So
yeah,
any type of appreciation we can show you, we will be glad to do it. So thank you very much for your loyalty.
Yes. There's a couple of fights we got coming up here. We got Crawford and Lundy, and we got Porter and Thurman on the horizon, Bradley and Pacquiao. So
Which one? Well, you know, let's start with the one, my least favorite, okay? And I'm talking about Crawford and Lundy. What do you think about that fight? And, I mean, I know, you know, Hank Lundy, we all know who Hank Lundy is. We're all familiar with his work. But do you think that maybe in this particular case, Crawford may have taken the easy way out?
See, I don't know the depth and details on how the fight was made, so I'm not I can't speak on that. If he took the easy way out, I don't know if he had a more difficult or more worthy opponent available to him, because the notion was that he was in line for the Pacquiao fight, but we know where that went.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of my reasoning here, because I don't know if we would have had Timothy Bradley Pacquiao 3 were it not for Teddy Atlas.
Correct. That's true, but also, we had, I call them money hungry, but, you know, everybody is to each his own. We all love money. But I think Khan was supposed to have been in line for that next. If if Bradley didn't take the fight, they was trying to push for Amir Khan for a Pacquiao comeback fight. He was supposed to have been number two in line, to my understanding. So
if you look at behind the scenes, there was one more name that was mentioned, which was David the Mute. But when you look at the one thing that I find that all of these guys had in common was the only one that was putting butts in seats is Pacquiao. I mean, you know, Lemieux, maybe if they had fought in Canada, and like I said, even you know, his last fight didn't sell out. Then the other guy that they were talking about was Willie Monroe Jr., and we saw what happened to him against Triple G. So, I mean, you know, it kind of came down almost to a war of attrition.
Yeah. But
but carrying it on further, do you really want to see Pacquiao Bradley 3? I mean,
no,
isn't that kind of like watching? I mean, isn't that kind of like watching Mayweather Pacquiao 2? You know, we don't want to see either one of them, do we?
No. Nope. Not at this time. Do you think? I mean, I know he's up and coming, but what about I'm talking about Terrence Crawford now. What about him and possibly him and Ali?
It's very interesting that you brought that up, because Ronnie Shields and I talked about that yesterday. Because Saddam Ali is actually scheduled to fight, and he's a little pissed that he was overlooked. Which might make for better press and better matchups, you know, later on down the line. So, you know, it is kind of hard to figure out. I mean, you know, to exactly see where these different avenues are going to take us. But you know, I guess the most important thing is that we have fights. And, you know, let me ask you, because, there's been a lot of controversy and everybody's talking about it. And I briefly mentioned it earlier, Mr. Al Haymon. Do you think that Al Haymon and the PBC series, contrary to what the experts would lead us to believe, is good for boxing?
I think it's great for boxing in the sense of it gives the a lot of up-and-coming boxers opportunity. Like, I caught the PBC card that was on Sunday night while I was listening to some other boxing podcasts and stuff, because I was searching for you. But I got on late, and then I found out that Ronnie Shields is taking a hiatus. Like, wow. But I think it's a great thing. We're getting a lot of up-and-coming prospects that's getting a little face time out here. I just don't like a lot of the fighters at the top. It's like they're back, like they're just sitting back waiting for a payday, whereas, you know, he's keeping everybody busy with the more up-and-coming fighters. But I think a lot of more fights at the top should be, you know, be pushed to be made. But I think 2016-2017, Al Haymon is going to make a big splash as far as the more top-heavy opponents, the A-tier and B-tiers, not so much of the C-tiers, is going to be matched up this year and the beginning of next year.
But I mean, you know, see, my thing is this. if you don't show them when they're C fighters, who's going to watch them when they're A fighters? Or how do they become A fighters if nobody knows who the hell they are? To me right now, this is one of the problems, because no one has a following. We have a lot of fair weather fans, but you don't see, you know, I mean, other than Floyd, and like I said, you know, he's really the man that most people love to hate, but you don't have, you know, the crowds that follow the fighter. You have fans that follow the game or the sport, but you have very, very few fighters that the fans connect with. And then we charge so much money at this particular time that a lot of the people that are fans really can't afford to watch these fighters unless we put them on a program, you know, such as a Spike TV or a PBS series or something like that. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, that I think that what we're starting to see, something that you brought up before, we're not getting a lot of, like, our home trainers, whereas you get these up-and-come boxers that's being trained by either, you know, a European coach or somebody that's maybe from a different coast. They say they from the East Coast, but they're training from the West Coast. So they're taken away from their hometown, and they'll go to wherever their trainer has their training camps. So it's like their hometown don't get behind them, see them doing their road work and seeing them out in the community. So where is, you know, kind of hard to build up a fan base, especially in their hometown, if they're not home. So I think that is one of the things. And it's no more self-promotion, no more. Either you're just a bad guy who just runs his mouth a lot, flamboyant, or you're just a quiet guy, you know. And it's sad to say, it's no more just genuine, I don't like you, I want to fight you boxing anymore. You know, like, I want to fight you. And not, you know, when I see you, I respect your skill, but I want to fight you. But nowadays, it's like everybody out having tea and lemonade with one another. And that's not how it used to be. Even going to, like, old wrestling, you know, it was like, you knew the villain and you know who the bad guy is and who's going to call everybody out and who's going to show up. Like, you knew watching that wrestling. Nowadays, boxing is like, you got a guy that they say Manny Pacquiao is this killer, but then when you hear him talk, it's like he's the nicest guy on the planet.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, you know, it kind of, in a lot of ways, it kind of sends out mixed messages. But you know, I'm gonna send you a text, my man, because there's a lot of things that I want to talk about in the show, and I think we can bounce back and forth off each other, and we're gonna carry this conversation on to the next level. As a matter of fact, I'm going to extend you a special invitation Sunday to come on and talk with me, and we'll fill in this Sunday. We'll kind of fill in for Ronnie. Ronnie, he has taken a hiatus. We expect him to be gone for a little bit. Like he said, you know, it's some family things and whatnot. And Ronnie, you know, I mean, hey, after 3.5 years. You know, the man deserves a break. He's another gentleman that's been with me since day one. Between, you know, him and Emmanuel, they gave me my start. So, you know, I have to be very, very thankful for some of the people that have helped me throughout the years. But We're gonna continue our conversations Sunday. And
okay.
why don't you tell everyone? Are you on any type of social media or anything? And I want to kind of get your name affiliated with the show, so we can have many more conversations, my man.
Okay, I'm Jabron Clement. I live in New York. Currently, I'm in Brooklyn, but born and raised in Virginia. I grew up 15 minutes away from Sweet Pea, and like I said, you can find me at my first name and last name, Jabron Clement, on Facebook. First name Jabran, last name Clemon. I'm willing to chat, voice my opinion, answer any questions, and that's about it. I appreciate you, James, for giving me the opportunity to speak my mind, and for us to pick each other's brains. I love open dialogue, so that's about it.
Oh, well, hey, no problem, man. And like I said, I'm going to send you a message. I'm pretty sure we already follow each other on Facebook, but I'm going to check that out. And, Sunday, 9:30 your time. How does that sound?
Perfect. I'll be on at 9 because I like to be when you start. So, I'll already be on the line, so you won't have to go searching for me.
All right, well, you know how to find us now, and hey, man, we hope to make you a very integral part of the program. Thank you so
All
much,
right.
man. All right, you have a
Thank
great night.
You too.
Well, everyone, we did have a short show for today. I wasn't really expecting Jabron to come in and join us, otherwise I would have made it the full 2 hours. But Jabron will be back with us on Sunday. And we'd like to thank our guests tonight, Mr. John Iceman Scully, Tony Harrison. We had him in for a quick minute. I'm going to try to see if I can get him back for our Super Bowl show. Also, Mr. Luis Garcia, up-and-coming light heavyweight prospect. And, a special shout-out to LeBron, and we hope to have some dialogue with him Sunday. And, have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next week on the Pugilist Corner.